Welcome to F1 Debrief episode 80, His Nose Flew Over His Head. Coming up on today's show, we discuss that calendar news, those penalties, and the fantasy racer story. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm quite tired.
It's the time zone changes.
It's been a bit of a weekend.
Yeah, it's messed up your body clock a little bit. How are you feeling? Are you suffering?
Yeah.
Badly? Or
yeah.
Doing okay?
Well, no, I'm doing okay. But I'll tell you something else. You know how we do good week, bad week?
I do that. Yeah, I do know. It's coming up soon, I believe.
Yeah. Am I allowed to put it's been a bad week for me? Because I've had quite a bad week.
You haven't had a bad week.
I had a bad Friday.
Friday was terrible. Yeah. We're going to get to that later, though. Don't ruin the surprise. And no, you may not have a good week, bad week, because that is saved for the important people in the Formula One world.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for new test drivers as Dutchman Chris van der Drift gets a go in the Honda because he won the Formula Master Championship. What's that?
No idea.
And also Paul di Resta gets 4 days of testing in the McLaren. He's done two already, I think, and two still to come. This is because he's associated with them in the DTM and they get to use their free inexperienced driver days.
Yes, that is one of those rules that the FIA have brought in that's really working. It's doing what it's meant to do. It's allowing teams to get extra testing mileage in by using a young driver, and that's giving the young driver experience in a Formula One car, and it's all working out very well.
In the comments, Journey has said that Formula Master is the future GP3.
Okay.
So that's Bernie's thing, isn't
it? Bernie's new thing.
And also RG says van der Drift is a good name for a racer. It's been a bad week for Renault, as Briatore has said he's planning to appoint a new director to oversee day-to-day running of the team next year. He told Gazzetta dello Sport, "We will hire a new director who will be in charge of day-to-day management. Instead, I will start busying myself with only the highly important matters within our team."
Now, last year, when questioned, he did say that he would remain as head of the Renault team as long as Fernando remained in the team. So is this an ominous sign that Fernando's on his way out?
I don't think so.
That's what he said.
Not after this weekend, though.
That's true. Do you think?
Plus, he'd still be involved with the team. It's been a good week for Toro Rosso as they finally turned up with some sponsorship this week. Lawson Station, which is the second largest convenience store in Japan, apparently. We think the reason they ran this sponsorship was that they want a bigger slice of the Japanese marketing. So they teamed up with 7-Eleven and Lawson Station.
Yes. I wonder if this may not bode well for Sato.
Really?
As a future Toro Rosso driver. Well, firstly, they're taking on sponsorship. And I think it's for the first time. And so they're looking for commercial partners. Red Bull are trying to get a foothold within the Japanese market. They want to sell more stuff in that country. Hence the reason for running 7-Eleven branding on the Red Bull team and for running the Lawson station marketing on the Toro Rosso team. So I think if you want to get a foothold in the Japanese market, Sato's your man.
It's been a bad week for manufacturers because Max and Bernie are allegedly planning to introduce cost-saving measures in the form of a standardised engine. Bernie was talking to Ed Gorman of The Times in Tokyo, and he said, "The thing I'm most excited about is pushing and pushing and pushing the homologated engine idea. The new engine will be equalised and there will only be 2 engine changes a year, so costs are going to dramatically come down." I read somewhere that all the teams said, "Standardise whatever you want, just not the engines."
That's the manufacturing, that's the marketing power gone out the window.
Yeah.
If Honda can't make their own engines, what are they going to market? Why
What's
are they
the
even
point?
Doing it? I can't see that happening, but I'm surprised that Bernie is suddenly saying he wants the cost to be driven down, because normally that's Max's job. So now Bernie's saying, I'm going to make sure that the championship, that the engines last,
two engines a year is nothing.
That's quite a shocking statistic. I think that's more for shock
value.
How
can you go from 2 races?
Yes.
To 18.
What's that, 9 races?
Yeah.
Wow. That's going to be an achievement. I would have said McLaren would be fine, but I'm not sure after this weekend.
News and views.
The FIA released the 2009 calendar this week, and without saying anything about it, no announcement or explanation, they kicked Canada off it.
Ooh.
Canada is no more.
Yeah. Controversial.
Yeah. The circuit organisers even said they didn't know and had to learn through the media. How rude.
I don't know if that's true. I don't know whether or not they were just saying that in order to buy themselves some time. But if it is true, that's a peculiar way of going about business for the FIA.
It's very poor.
Yes. Dropping races via the medium of a press release is not fun, especially when the press release doesn't go into any detail as to what the reason for the drop would be. It doesn't look like it's coming back.
No.
It?
And no one is happy about it. No. No fans are happy about it. No teams are happy about it.
No.
Nick Fry said, "We are hugely disappointed. It will be a major topic for the next meeting of the teams." And he added, "Really, we need to look at how we not only get back to Canada, but back to America, potentially more than once, because it's such an important market."
Do you think Boney's finally twigged how important America is to the teams, and now he's just twisting them for more and more money? Because I mean, there was a point in the week when he said, when the team said, "We're gonna bail the Canadian GP out.
We'll pay to go there."
Yeah, which is a ridiculous situation when Burnley's paying them to be in the championship, paying them for competing, and then they're taking prize money for getting points, and then they're giving it back to Canada, who are giving them that money back to Burnley. So Burnley's pocket just goes up and up and up.
Yeah.
It gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and the only person who makes money is Eccleston.
2 days after the calendar was released, Paul Wilson, Vice President of Marketing for Grand Prix F1 Canada, said his company is close to $30 million in debt. I think we're assuming that's Canadian dollars.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO of the company doesn't want to be responsible for putting on the event in the future. I'm not sure what they're going to do, though, because the company is Grand Prix F1 Canada.
Right.
Kind of limited your opportunities there.
Yeah, there's going to be a rebranding exercise going on at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, and he added that in order to make a profit, ticket sales would have to double next year.
Well, that wouldn't go down well with the fans.
No.
But if there's a shortfall and the teams think that they can make up this shortfall, how much money are they making on tickets that they need to double it to make up the difference?
Not a lot.
Not much.
No. The race does bring economic benefits to Montreal, though. So there has been talk about getting the government involved and taxpayers.
Right. Bernie's favourite line.
Mm.
This isn't a profit-making business. You're not making money out of me. You're putting on a race in order to bring visitors to your country, and that's what
it's
I'm
just
doing.
A big marketing exercise.
There is a problem for the British Grand Prix in that argument, because typically, as these things tend to work out, by the most unfortunate of timing, Gordon Brown's got into a whole heap of trouble this weekend.
Oh dear.
Yeah, because a whole bunch of information and facts have come out about the Bernie Eccleston stroke Tony Blair tobacco fiasco.
Yeah, well, it was revealed yesterday that Tony Blair personally ordered an exemption for motor racing from a tobacco sponsorship ban following a £1 million donation and a meeting from Bernie. It's always been speculated
Absolutely.
That this happened, but new documents have been released under the Freedom of Information Act, and it proves it.
Yep.
And it also proves that Gordon Brown was aware of the gift despite denying all knowledge on the radio.
Yes, he did come on the radio, didn't he? He had an interview and he said there's absolutely no way this is going on and nothing to do with
us.
He
was the money man at the time, so he must have known about it.
Yep, and now he's in a position of power and I can't see the British government having any interest in anything to do with Formula One ever again.
No, because it was a long time ago, so the scandal of it's really died down. But
yes,
the fact is, it's just embarrassing for them, isn't it?
It's being dragged up now. The scars run deep. And at a time when Bernie is saying government should chip in and basically fund and plug the gap, the difference in profit gap, I think it basically spells the end of the British Grand Prix.
Qualifying.
To me, the most important thing of the whole weekend, never mind all that racing stuff, disgusting green tyres.
Vile. Horrible.
Just a stupid idea.
Yeah, not thought through. By any means, not from a marketing point of view, not from a racing point of view, not from the fans' point of view. It's just a silly, silly implementation of what can only have been something cooked up in a very, very, very late night after a heavy drinking session by the FIA.
Bridgestone decided to support the FIA's Make Cars Green campaign in the most visible way possible.
Mm-hmm.
They painted the grooves on the tyres green. All the grooves, except the one that was white, but it's not like you could tell the difference.
No, this smacks of Bridgestone trying to get some headlines. Yep, absolutely. It does not look like they have any interest in anything to do with making cars green, because they transport their rubber from Japan all the way to a base in Europe, whereby it's then redistributed to Formula One Grand Prix. If they wanted to do anything green, first they'd sort out the process of getting their tyres around the world.
Yeah.
It's entirely geared at getting them headlines, and good headlines, and positive headlines, and somehow the two top teams were roped into doing this. Ferrari and McLaren turned up to the press conference with both of their drivers, both spouting utter nonsense. Again, you know when, remember when Honda announced their Earth campaign 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Do you remember at the press conference, they said, Honda's going green, and we're going to do all these cool things, and we're going to be energy efficient, and we're going to paint the car to look like an Earth.
Yeah.
And they basically lined up their drivers, and the press were allowed to ask any questions. And obviously, the obvious question is, how are you drivers helping maintain our planet?
Yeah.
And they had no preparation, and Jenson Button's only one and only answer was, I ride a bike sometimes. And because they had no one had organised anything, and no one prepared them with anything
to say. You'd think they might have thought about it a little bit.
Yeah, and exactly the same thing happened at this press conference, four drivers turn up. They're all asked how they're protecting our country, how to protect our planet on which we live. None of them had a sensible answer.
No. Raikkonen, I think, said, sometimes I don't put stuff in my boot.
Of my...
Ferrari.
Right, and that helps my fuel economy.
Yeah.
I haven't found his press release. This is what David Cross said on Radio 5 Live. I was killing myself when he was talking about it. What an utterly ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah.
They had no preparation. I think Lewis Hamilton said he turns off the lights.
That's
something. It's the small things.
Yeah.
But then again, he also said, he was then questioned afterwards what he does about public transport. He says, I would take the bus, but I'm a bit too famous.
Well, that's fair enough.
Well, you know.
That's why I don't take the bus.
Oh, right. It's a very ill thought out marketing.
Considering how normally Formula One is so, you can tell that people have written exactly what you have say out loud, and they've memorized all these
releases.
Corporate words.
So well organized.
It seems a bit odd that they just let this fall.
They put them on the spot. They trundled them out like trophy drivers, and you know, give us your green images, and they had no answers to give. It's all bunkum. And it's all about making Bridgestone look really, really cool. Although, in actual fact, it just makes Formula One look silly.
Yeah, the Make Cars Green thing, I'm sure it's a good initiative.
Probably.
But I didn't learn much about it from this, that the green tyres were quite annoying.
Yeah, I couldn't read any of the text because my eyes were drawn to the green rubber stripes.
Yeah.
It's vile. It looks silly on the track.
The other thing is that they painted the nice green on the tyres. Mm. I say nice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just rubbed off, which just makes you think that Formula One just rubs off the green.
Just burns up tyres.
Yeah.
That's the message it sent out.
If you ignore the tyres, which we kind of had to do because you couldn't tell them apart anyway, Fuji is actually really quite nice when the sun's out.
That came as a bit of a surprise, didn't it?
Yeah, I could even see the mountain.
There's a lovely mountain there with a snow peak cap. And even the scenery, the surrounding mountains, the surrounding countryside and the hillside, it all looked lovely.
It was lovely, except one thing. Friday was a bit boring.
Yes.
I was a bit worried that we were going to have quite a boring weekend.
Well,
it was like, it looks nice, not so much action.
Yeah, it was an early start, but you'd have thought, given that nobody has ever raced in Formula One on that track in the dry, people will be looking to get more data. But they didn't seem... I mean, the track was busy. And I guess the other problem with this place is there's so much runoff. No one ever has a major accident.
No, there were a couple of people running wide every now and again, but nothing major to note.
There were no dangerous curbs. There was no bottoming out of the cars. And no one knows. So people just wandered around and ran in circles and they tuned the cars to the point they wanted to. And that was all free practice gave us.
It was a little bit wet on Saturday morning. So free practice 3 was a wet session, but the rain had actually finished. And even that wasn't exactly thrilling.
No, it did bring back bad memories.
Yeah.
I thought. I was a little bit worried seeing the rooster tails coming out of those cars going around those corners. It didn't fill me with a lot of joy, but luckily the weather passed. It was cold for qualifying, but it was dry.
There were some things to note in qualifying. The first thing is that Heidfeld was out in Q1. Couldn't make it through.
Made a mistake.
Well,
openly admitted it.
Yeah, BMW said they kept him on hard tyres so that they could save them for later.
There was
save
no
the
later.
Soft tyres for later. It just didn't work.
A team mistake? Or a team and a driver mistake?
I don't know.
Where did it go wrong and how did...
No one's blaming anyone. I shouldn't think it was that.
Kubica went on a similar strategy and he was fine.
Yeah.
So how did he manage to scrape through?
Well, Heidfeld... has never been that good in qualifying anyway.
The difference meant he stayed in Q1.
I guess it did. In the second session, Bourdais got through by the skin of his teeth.
Yep.
I think he went into 8th or something and then was pushed down to 10th.
Yes.
It was like, is he going to get through?
Again, both Toro Rossos into Q3.
Yes.
What a car. What
Which
a team.
Is really good. And also both Toyotas.
Which is good for their home Grand Prix.
Yeah.
On the track that they own.
And Glock had actually... posted the fastest time in free practice 2 as well.
Right.
Which was probably a bit of showboating, but still quite impressive. Raikkonen only managed 7th in the second session of qualifying, but he improved marvellously into the top 10 shootout.
Yes. On the first set of runs, he was doing splendid out there. Made such a difference. It was like the Kimi Raikkonen of old. And McLaren were looking like they were in trouble.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to be a Ferrari race.
Yeah. Hamilton managed to pull out a stunner of a lap.
Yeah.
Whilst Massa faltered.
Yeah.
Made a mistake.
Yeah.
Didn't prepare his tyres correctly. Kimi though, got the better of his teammate. That's Kimi of old.
Yeah, because I think he said he's had qualifying issues previously, so he must have got them sorted out
in
here.
In the cold temperatures, you would have expected Ferrari to suffer.
Yeah.
And they had to do quite a few laps. But They got the, you know, Kimi got the job done. He was second row, and with a reasonable fuel load on board.
We don't know how much fuel Hamilton had, though.
No.
Because obviously that was ruined in the race, in which the race, we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
But we don't know how light he was.
But it was a good lap. It was a very good lap.
Definitely. That's pretty much it, to be honest. Like I said, we weren't impressed with free practice.
Mm-mm.
Qualifying wasn't exactly stunning, so we weren't hopeful for the race.
No, it didn't set up the race particularly well.
No, because like in Singapore, we were raring to go.
Yes, and every session was a blinder. In this instance, it did look like Sunday could be a quiet one.
Yeah, but nevertheless, we still made our predictions.
And this week, we did get some predictions from Jordan via voicemail. So do you want to play that now?
Hello, it's Jordan here. I'm calling from Kamloops, BC, on behalf of the 2008 Formula One Fuji Television Japanese Grand Prix. Looks like it's a pretty decent track. Again, I kind of prefer Suzuka a little more over it, but it's nice. So anyway, I may as well throw in my predictions for this race. I think the first is going to be Mr. Kimi Raikkonen. He's due for a win, definitely. Second is going to be Fernando Alonso, because I think he's going to kind of pop open from his win from Singapore. And then third, I think it's going to be Robert Kubica. And where is going to be Lewis Massa and Heike going to be? Well, I think Lewis and Massa are due to have championship problems, and even Heike for third. I don't think he's going to have problems, but I don't know if you guys have noticed this. He will qualify in the top three or so, and he'll have a pretty good part one of the race, but after in part two of the race, he'll kind of fall off, and I just, you know, he kind of loses it after a while. So it'll be an interesting race. I really can't wait for it. It's not early for me. It's going to be at about 10 p.m. or 10:30 p.m. my time.
Jordan, well, firstly, quite jealous. 10 p.m. start sounds really nice right about now. But how spooky was that prediction?
That is weird. He knew Alonso was going to be up there, and he knew that Hamilton and Massa weren't going
to
be.
It's quite close to Kofi too.
Yeah.
Well done. That was a brilliant voicemail. Other predictions. We got predictions in the live commenting too. Who have you got and who was close?
All the ones I could find. We had Hamilton in the top three somewhere.
Mm.
All of them.
Okay.
Also, four people out of six that I've got here had Massa. Lots of people had Raikkonen, and you had Alonso up there, and also so did Rich.
Really?
I think you both had Alonso in third.
Did anybody have Alonso for the win?
Not that I could see.
No.
No, it was like either Hamilton, Raikkonen, or Massa, which is what you would expect. That's a look at the predictions. We'll find out what happened in the race after this short break. If you miss any of the weekend's action from Free Practice 1 through to the checkered flag, tune into F1 Digest, dedicated daily coverage of all the on-track action, including the best bits from live commenting and all the reaction from teams and drivers. Visit sidepodcast.com to listen and subscribe. Before the race even got going, we were a bit let down, weren't we?
Disappointment rules all when it comes to ITV.
Because they sort of promised that Ted would be anchoring the weekend.
They sent us a press release.
They did.
It said, this week, Steve Ryder's doing some football thing, which we don't care about. So Ted's anchoring.
It didn't quite say that, did it?
So Ted's anchoring the show.
Right, but he wasn't.
We were really excited about.
Yeah, we like Ted.
Mm.
Ted News.
Absolutely.
He has his own jingle.
He does.
Qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Ted.
No.
It was Martin Brundle.
But that's okay, because the press release said Ted is anchoring the race. It never mentioned qualifying, so that could have been a blip.
Yeah, we just assumed that maybe he didn't want to do both or
whatever.
But he wasn't there for the race either.
Martin doesn't have his own jingle.
No. Martin News. No,
that wouldn't work at all. So we turn it on. Ted's not anchoring. He's doing his usual job. Louise is doing her usual job. And Martin's sort of double shifting because he has to run up to the commentary box and there's no grid walk.
No. He did a really good job. And it was actually much more preferable to when Steve Ryder does it.
Yeah.
But we wanted to see Ted.
I thought, well, we did. And I'll tell you what, I thought Mark Blundell was better.
Yeah.
Alongside Martin.
Well, it depends. You just got to ask the right questions, haven't you?
Yeah. Essentially.
He gets asked about Lewis all the time. That's all he's going to talk about.
Absolutely. So I think he did a much better job. He talked better English, though, as a result, which was quite
really?
Weird. Yeah. It just seemed like a more sensible Mark Blundell.
Interesting.
Hmm. I don't know what was going on there. Martin looked a little bit awkward, but I thought he carried off quite well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he doesn't have to do the normal TV presenting side of it much.
He had
all the facts.
Absolutely. He didn't look completely comfortable. But as soon as he got onto the subject of Formula One, he was away, obviously. But when he had to cut between different scenes and all that kind of thing, it was a little bit more difficult. But all in all, he did well, but I'd rather it was Ted.
So we weren't expecting a brilliant race, but we knew that the first corner was likely to be dramatic because it's a good corner.
Didn't disappoint, did it?
It was amazing.
Mm. I don't really know where to begin, to be honest with you.
Well, really, the only way to put it is that Hamilton drove it like a rookie.
Yeah. He wasn't a world champion's corner.
No, he wanted to get those places.
Yes. Despite spending the whole week saying, didn't I do well in Singapore when I didn't try and overtake?
Which he did.
Nico, yeah, absolutely fine. And haven't I learned a lot? And aren't I going to be patient for the remainder of this world championship? And aren't I going to play the points game?
Yeah.
No. Not at all.
But he did have a really bad start, and I think that must have just thrown him. He wasn't expecting to lose those places straight away.
Kimi passed him almost instantly.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining Kimi had a really good start. Lewis didn't fall behind his teammate.
No. I think it just threw him a little bit to watch cars going past him.
Yes, and that was a hell of a lockup. Mm. Best lockup of the year, I would say.
If there's an award for such a
flat
thing.
Flat spot in your tyres within the first corner of the race.
Quite
an achievement. And flying off the track. The concertina effect, though, was amazing. Watching everybody back in the grid, because that one manoeuvre cutting off Kimi and then blocking the rest of the drivers, essentially everyone just stacked up and nobody made that apex.
Well, they ran wide, and so no one could turn in, and everyone else followed them. And just two drivers got through.
Which was?
Kubica and Alonso. They both got through unscathed.
Right.
And really, that set up the whole race for them, didn't it?
I'll tell you something. I mean, we have to thank Lewis for that first corner, because it made such a race, an unexpected race, but such a race. An enjoyable afternoon, or morning, in fact. An enjoyable morning's watch for us. An enjoyable afternoon's racing. And it was just, it made such a difference. But Lewis had done the damage to his tyres. Serious damage to his tyres.
I mean, if he hadn't... if the Massa thing hadn't happened, which we'll talk about in a second, would he have managed to get very much further anyway?
No, you'd have had Nürburgring 2005, where the front tyre just basically smashes up the front suspension.
Just explodes.
Yeah, I thought he did well to challenge Massa, considering the tyres he had. Massa's tyres were presumably fine.
Yeah.
And Lewis had this flat spot on, presumably, was it the front right and the front left, or just the front right? But he certainly had a major vibration in the front of the car. He still managed to challenge Massa into the chicane, which was quite an achievement.
Yeah, you've got to wonder why Massa was so far behind him anyway.
Yeah, he did a rubbish job of defending twice, because first he let him through, then he whacked into him.
Yeah, which was just so stupid.
It was lame driving from Massa.
It was just off the circuit and he smacked right into him. It's crazy.
No, so that wasn't a world champion's drive either.
No,
either of the contenders today. The only person who may have put in a drive worthy of its name was Kubica.
Well, Raikkonen did an okay job.
But not enough to remain in it.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Not what we've seen before.
And certainly Heidfeld didn't. So the first lap was just a mess for both championship contenders. And that really sets us up for a great remaining number of races, and also for a great afternoon.
But before we even got off the first lap, DC was out. He didn't even make it to the second corner.
No, and he took Nakajima with him.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
which is a shame.
Kazuki had nowhere else to go at his home Grand Prix. His nose flew over his head.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a violent crash, that.
Yes. I think Coulthard said he was stuck between two drivers.
Right.
They were all heading for the same bit of track.
Yeah.
And it just went wrong.
It's always DC though, isn't it?
Well,
anyone else.
That's
wasn't
true.
Wasn't anyone else, it's always DC.
But then he's always in the middle.
Is it? Well, that's another good point. Only two races to go for him.
Hamilton got a drive-through penalty for the first corner incident, basically for running Raikkonen off the road, we think.
Yeah.
And that
penalty seemed a bit harsh. I mean, he did stuff Kimi's race. So, you know, Kimi may have been in with a chance of winning this one.
Yeah.
And Hamilton's manoeuvre did ruin any chance he might have had.
Well, in the live comments during the race, I think Stewart said he'd seen, not during the race, after the race, Stewart said he'd seen some pictures of a different angle, and you could just tell that Hamilton came at it really quite like a maniac.
Right, aggressively.
Yeah, and it just wasn't sensible. So maybe that's more what it was about.
Okay, dangerous
driving. The fact that he wasn't in control.
Yes, fair enough. Okay.
And Massa got a drive-through penalty for the thing with Hamilton.
Yes. The tap.
Yes.
Which was warranted because he wasn't on the racetrack when he hit him, which is quite an achievement to hit a driver whilst not being on the racetrack, I think. There must be some kind of points awarded for that.
Yeah.
He had four wheels off the track and still managed to turn Lewis around.
Hamilton was actually really quite good, though, because he waited for everyone to go past. Wasn't it Trulli that he was spun around the wrong way a couple of races ago?
In Spa, at the bus stop.
And he just turned around and carried on despite everyone else, got in all their way.
Yeah, he did a 360, very dangerous 360 maneuver.
Hamilton was actually quite courteous and waited.
He did have the common sense
ruined
to
his race.
Sit there. Yeah, again, like I said before, I don't know how he managed to get a car with flat-spotted tyres around Massa to be in a position to be hit. But once he was hit, he did all the right things. He flipped his car around and
got it back to the pit lane safely.
Yeah, it was calm and it was collected and it was fine after that.
And they were quite good to suddenly change the strategy. You know, they just changed it like that.
Yep.
Put him onto a one-stop strategy. So they had it under control straight away.
They did. They didn't have Kovalainen under control, though.
No.
Unreliability.
Unbelievable.
Mm. McLaren, at this stage in the championship.
McLaren never have engine failures.
All the times. Well, in the past, going back to 2004, 2005, all they had was engine failures.
Right. But they fixed that, obviously.
They've solved that problem. Mercedes are now probably the most reliable engine on the grid this year. And suddenly, at the worst possible time, Kovalainen is out. He was in a good position. He might have done well.
They say that he could have got the win, but then they would say that. You never know.
Against Alonso today.
And Kubica as well. So.
I don't know. The way Kovi drives, I don't think so. But he was in a good position for some points. And the engine let him down. Someone I did want to mention as a guy who doesn't get much airtime on this show.
Yeah.
Adrian Sutil.
All right.
At the beginning, he played a blinder. I don't know what kind of start he had or how he managed to find a clean way through. He was up to almost, he was in 11th and I think up to 10th just before his tyre failed.
Yeah, he's so unlucky, isn't he?
It was. How good would that have been if you had Sutil up in the points?
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. Unfortunately, he picked up some debris somewhere. Possibly
some
of Coulthard's
debris, I think. Yeah,
something to do with DC. Even though he wasn't a guy who bounced off the guy. And unfortunately, he lost out just after he passed Button, which is disappointing.
Yeah. But Button was up in 10th too. I mean, that's quite impressive.
Another good, yeah.
He had problems with his tyres. I think they just wore out a little bit.
Right, so he had a really good start, but although he kept the car on the island, the car wasn't up for the fight today.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a shame.
We mentioned earlier that Glock topped the timesheets in FP2, but he didn't manage to complete the race, which is quite disappointing.
Remind me, this is Glock with the Joker engine change.
Yep.
Thus, that's how dedicated Toyota were to doing something good in this race.
Yeah.
They were prepared to make him have an engine change.
They were doing good, having a good start to the weekend.
Yep.
And then they wasted it.
Yes.
He said he drove over some debris and went over a curb. And then because he was on the grass, he got launched into the air and that broke his car.
Right.
Seems a bit complex, but yes. We didn't see any of it either.
No, we didn't. Well, there was a lot going on
at
that point in the race. That's a shame. Is all I can really say to that, because he was having a pretty good year. And between the two of them, he was looking more racer than Trulli. And he was in with a reasonable chance, especially with the two title contenders out or at the back. He could have picked up a good haul of points.
Yeah, because we did see some crazy people. Not crazy people, but we did see some crazy leads.
Yes.
Because Trulli led again.
Yep.
The ultimate Trulli train once again.
Yep.
Love it. PK led.
Not for the first time.
He was doing pretty well as well. Mm-hmm. Once he's got a decent car under him.
It makes a difference, doesn't
it? Much improved.
Yeah. Did we not see exactly the same last year with Kovalainen, though? Beginning the year, in a rubbish Renault.
It was his brother driving.
Yeah, it was embarrassing, and Flav gave him a load of grief. PK in a rubbish Renault this year. Loads
got
of grief.
A lot of grief.
Yep.
From us as well.
From everybody. Well, yeah, Kovalainen got a lot of grief from us last year, but suddenly, give the guy a decent car, give him a good Renault, and it all comes good then.
And also, Bourdais led the race at one point, which is amazing.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I'm sure he's done it before. He must have done it in Spa or somewhere, because I wasn't that excited about it.
Quite excited about it.
Well, yeah, you would be. I think Piquet's led a race already. Obviously, he did it at the Hockenheim Ring. And I'm sure Bourdais has done it too.
Okay, fair
but
enough.
Still exciting.
Yeah, he was doing pretty well until the Massa incident. Another Massa incident.
Yeah. That guy's collecting incidents like they're going out of fashion.
Yeah.
Watched it on YouTube, which was slightly dodgy quality, you couldn't really tell. But for some reason, it was decided that we would live comment the race twice.
Yeah.
Today.
You spent all day live commenting again.
Yeah. We live commented the replay, which was kind of weird, but kind of cool. Because I got to see that incident again in large. Yeah. I could rewind it, could shuttle back and forth, and could look at it in detail. It looked like when Bourdais came out of the pits, he was obviously heavy. He had fresh tyres, which were cold. Brakes, which had been cooling in the pit lane. It looked like he came out a little bit hot, clipped the curb, and bounced ever so slightly as if he wasn't in control of his car. And Massa looked like he took the normal line. Now, you could argue that Massa should have taken a wider line, should have given the guy a bit of room. I don't think Massa did anything different on that lap to any other lap, but he should have seen the STR car, so it shouldn't have been a surprise that he was there. And he could have been sensible and just gone a little bit wider. But I do wonder if Bourdais wasn't airborne for a fraction of a second.
Bourdais did say that it was, I mean, he basically said it was a lack of respect from Massa because, you know, you have to give room. If someone's coming out of the pits, all right, they have to be aware of you. But at the same time, if there are two cars on the track, you've got to deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wasn't just about to let him by and that was it.
And Ollie in the live comments is pointing out that what we really need to see, we need to see the onboard camera from Bourdais. to see it from his point of view, because we've only got the one camera angle and it's always the same camera angle. That's all we've got to work with. And the other thing, we need to know exactly why the stewards came to the decision they did. And there is talk that next year that will happen. We'll have more detail. There'll be more transparency.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, but at the moment we have a one curt line piece of information that basically says he caused the collision with another car. The end. Full stop. No more argument. No more questions. You shall know no more. So we're in the dark as to exactly why the penalty was handed out, and it does seem a little bit unfair. And the guy fell out of the points as a result of it. After the first corner, Kimi managed to have a cleaner race than his teammate.
Yeah. You couldn't really have a worse race, could you?
No. But as happened in Singapore, all the excitement seemed to happen to Massa. And Kimi had a relatively quiet race, except for when he caught up with Kubica after his second stop. That was a bit exciting.
Yeah.
Bit of good racing there. I was slightly disappointed that Kimi didn't fight him harder. Because if you remember in Fuji last year, the most exciting bit of the race, given that the first half of it was stuck behind the safety car, was Kimi battling with Kovalainen right to the flag. It was overtaken, he was going wide, he was off the track, he was on the track, never ever gave up. Now, he was still in with a shout at the championship at that point, but I just thought his heart wasn't really in it after the first two or three attempts.
No, I think he had problems, though. He had damage.
Right.
I'm not sure, but I mean, the fact that he caught him up meant he should have given it more of a go, maybe.
He could have done some damage to his tyres. He could have overdriven it. I just thought there was more fight in Kimi last year than there was this year. And if it's because he's not in the chance with the championship, that's fine. That's understandable. But last year, it was mesmerising watching him catch up with and attempt to pass Kovalainen. And this year, I really hoped we would be in for more of the same. It didn't quite play out like that. And in fact, Piquet caught them up in the end. That's roughly how slow they were going.
In the comments, Lady Snowcats just pointed out that Kimi got graining and Kubica got graining, but it was at different times.
Okay.
So it was sort of like swings and roundabouts.
Right. So when one had it, the other didn't. That made the difference. That would explain it to a certain extent. I didn't think graining was quite as bad at this track, but if both of the drivers suffered from it, I guess there was some kind of pending issue right towards the end of the race.
The only reason Raikkonen managed to catch up to the back of Kubica and not Alonso is because the Renault mechanics got him out faster.
Yes.
In the pit lane.
Great pit work.
Which is amazing because BMW are like the fastest pit laners in the West.
Pit laners?
Yep.
Yeah. The crew are or have been timed to be the fastest team in the pit lane.
Yeah.
And therefore, for Renault to perform what they did and get Alonso out in front of Kubica. I mean, Alonso was short fueled.
Yeah.
So, there was a difference in the time that he was stationary. However, the team did a perfect job.
No mistakes.
No mistakes from Renault. And thumbs up to them.
So Alonso got his second win in a row, which is amazing. You wouldn't have put money on that ever.
Unexpected.
Yeah.
They've made a step forward.
They really have.
Actually, no, they've made a leap forward.
Yeah.
That's not been around that bush. How and why, I'm sure we're going to have to be discussing for a very long time, because God knows where they've found the performance they have. That car was a dog at the beginning of the year, and it nuked engines on a weekly basis.
I mean, obviously, two races in a row now, they've been somewhat lucky.
Yes.
Obviously, there's safety car issues, and this time the Singapore, top runners were out.
Singapore was fortuitous, and it's likely that Alonso wouldn't have been able to take the fight to Hamilton and Massa had they not been in the situation they were in. However, it was on merit. The win was on merit.
The pace is always there.
He fought Kubica. And that's not a slow or shoddy car.
I'll tell you what, though. Alonso says he loves the team again now, which is a bit fair weather. Oh, yay, we've won two races in a row. I love you guys.
You're the best.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. Yes. Yeah, he's like that, though. That doesn't surprise me in the slightest. Lady Snowcat in the comments just pointed out, what about PK? Fourth place. That's really good too. So they've pulled something out of the bag when it comes to that car. Shame it's so late in the year.
It's too late to make any difference whatsoever.
It is.
But they've definitely got that fourth place down.
Okay, because we can do this now, we can take some live calls. And I think our first caller is Mr. Stephen Roy. Hello, Stephen.
Hello there.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, very well, very well.
Good stuff. What's on your mind right now?
It's something we discussed a couple of weeks ago. I'm here to defend a few people who have been badly, sort of, had their reputations tarnished this year unfairly.
Right, yes.
Leinen, Raikkonen, Coulthard, Piquet, Bourdais, Heidfeld, and Honda.
Right, blimey. Okay, so you are going to defend all of these drivers?
With one theory.
With one theory, excellent. Okay, please go ahead then.
Okay. Over the years, we get more and more used to seeing grids set up almost like a Noah's Ark formation, where you have two Ferraris, two McLarens, and the cars are almost even all the way down the grid. This year, for some reason, we don't have that. We get so many mixed up grids and so many mixed up race finishes. And I thought, well, there must be something that's affecting this. It must be something to do with driver styles. And I started looking as well. You've got Massa, Alonso, Kubica. They're all doing much better than their teammates, and in most cases where you wouldn't expect it. And they're all, they all used to having a lot of understeer. But then Hamilton's doing much better than Kovalainen, and he's exactly the opposite.
Okay.
I mean, actually, the driving styles of the drivers who are suffering. It's all the guys who are the smoother. Sorry, it's all the people who are the smoother driver in the team who is suffering.
So can we just run through those one at a time then? So up front in Ferrari, you've got Massa and Raikkonen. So you're saying Raikkonen's smoother?
Raikkonen's smoother than Massa. Kovalainen is smoother than Lewis, because Lewis is known for being rough with his car. Yeah, Alonso's more aggressive than Piquet. Weber is more aggressive than DC, who's known as being the sort of ultimate smooth driver, as is Heidfeld compared to Kubica. And Vettel is more aggressive than Bourdais. For some reason, which I cannot figure out, I don't know if it's tyres this year, I don't know if it's something they've done to change the cars of the common ECU and the lack of traction control, but there's something to do with this year's cars, which is severely punishing smooth drivers.
I see. You may well be onto something with this theory. Didn't we have the reverse of this problem when we went to a single tyre supply at the beginning of last year?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah.
And who gained and who lost? Because surely when that happened, it took a couple of months for the likes of Kimi to sort of get on top of the tyres and make the most of them, and then he came good. How come that hasn't happened this year?
I can only assume there's some fundamental technical thing with the cars which can't be overcome, because I expected it to be much the same as last year, that when Kimi started struggling at the start of the year, I assume long before now, it'd be well ahead of Massa, but it just hasn't happened. The interesting thing is, though, if you look at the race we've just had, all of a sudden, all the drivers started better. I mean, Kovalainen qualified right behind Lewis. Raikkonen, DC, both out-qualified their teammates. And the only thing I can think is it's something to do with the layout of Fuji, because I know there's a lot of corners there with late apexes where you have to be smooth in the turn then, and all of a sudden, the things almost flip completely again. So there's something very odd. And I think everyone said after last season that this year's Honda has to be better than last year's, but it hasn't been. But Button and Barrichello are two of the smoothest drivers out there. You put a more aggressive driver in that Honda, Alonso, for example, it may have six tenths in there that we're not seeing so far.
That is a hell of a theory. I like where you're coming from there. Is it not? Is driving style? Do you know if driving style is not something you can adapt more? Could you not become a more aggressive driver once you figured out that your teammate was doing better than you because he was more aggressive?
I think it's one of these things. Some people, I mean, Schumacher, I mean, one of his abilities was basically he could change his driving style almost at a whim. Some people can drive round problems, but other people, it's almost like a fingerprint to them. For example, I mean, if you take the start of last season when Alonso and Massa, they were really, really aggressive understeer drivers. I mean, when the tyres changed, they had to adapt to that and back off from the position. Now, they both managed to do it. But the thing that baffles me about last season is how McLaren managed to give Alonso and Hamilton a car that they could both drive, because they both want exactly the opposite from it. And I've said this before in places, that drivers moving teams and teams signing drivers don't seem to look at driving styles. I mean, if you took take Alonso, for example, and put him in Raikkonen's seat, he'd be doing a lot better, because that car does like understeer and it suits him. But it doesn't mean he's better than Kimi, because if you took Kimi and put him in Lewis's car, he'd be doing the same as Lewis is doing, and Lewis would just die in the Ferrari. So it seems to be something that people who run Formula One and drivers themselves don't seem to look into this.
No, I think you're right. Now, how do you think next year's tyre regulation changes are going to affect this situation then? Because we're going to slicks from grooves. Do you think the same thing's going to happen? Because Bridgestone are talking about varying the differences in terms of soft compound and hard compound. Is it going to be status quo between those who have got it sussed and those who haven't? Or do you think it could all flip around just as easily?
I think there's so many technical changes next year that the whole thing could turn on its head again. It may be that the fact the slicks come back in, that rewards the smoother drivers because they can then lean on the mechanical grip of the car more. And obviously you've got a lot less aero, so who knows, it could go either way. And obviously you've got the KERS and the adjustable aero, so that could change the whole thing over completely.
All right, well, thank you for your call, Stephen. Very, very much appreciated, because that's quite an insightful idea. I hadn't thought about that. Nobody else has mentioned it anywhere. I think you're onto something with that one.
Well, I must admit, I've been listening to Mark Hughes when he was on the radio all weekend, and he was baffled as to why drivers are performing, so we'll see if he's still baffled on Thursday.
Yeah, he won't be next Friday. He'll have it all sussed out. Cheers, Stephen.
Okay, bye.
Alrighty, on the line now, talking about the Massa penalty, we have Dr. V. Hello, V.
It's not the Massa penalty, it's the birthday.
Oh. Sorry. Have I got the wrong penalty? Sorry. Okay, give us your thoughts, Doctor. What are you thinking about? What are your thoughts on this morning or this afternoon, today's race?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what happened. After the race, I went to bed to catch some extra sleep because I didn't get very much before the race.
We know that feeling.
Yes. The first thing I did was I switched on the television, looked up the result on BBC iQ, and I saw there that Bourdais got his penalty. I just kind of felt, you know, that there was a kind of inevitability that I couldn't trust the race result as I saw it on the television. And it's kind of getting quite annoying now.
It's not the first time that a post-race penalty has gone in favour of Ferrari. So you're saying you were almost expecting it, and it was basically you were just delaying the inevitable when you went to the website and
yes,
that's what you expected to see.
I was just kind of double-checking, and I saw the result, and I thought, well, I was kind of, you know, how to put it, I was kind of disappointed, but at the same time, I wasn't shocked or anything. I was just kind of like, oh, God, here we go again.
And during the race, it was mentioned that Massa would likely be the candidate who would get the penalty, and suddenly, post-race, it swings around in the opposite direction. So, if you...
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, all the commentators, everything I've seen... All the, I think on the Inside Line podcast and on the Checker Flag podcast, they were all saying, oh, we were thinking Massa's going to get the penalty for slamming, or, you know, for going straight into Sebastian Bourdais, who's just tight in on the curb,
Mind
his own business on the first corner. At the same time, when it came up that the incident was going to be under investigation after the race, and that's another thing that kind of annoys me, because now they're starting to do this, they're investigating...
Yep.
The incidents after the race, which is a real cop-out, I think, because, you know...
It wasn't five laps from the end of the race at all. It was nowhere near, in fact. We were barely halfway through.
And, you know, what's to stop them from making a decision during the race? I mean, why is it all of a sudden they're making these... They're deciding to put a caption on the television screen saying they're going to decide after the race?
Sure.
That's just insulting to the viewers, in my view.
Agreed, yep.
The point is, we see these little races all the time when people... One person's coming out the pit lane... and the other person's coming along from the racetrack. This happens on a race-by-race basis. It's kind of a normal thing. So when I thought, you know, why are they investigating this? Because this is kind of normal. Ah, red car. That's kind of what was in the back of my mind. So when, at the same time, even though everyone said, oh, well, if they penalise anyone for that, it'll be Massa. At the same time, I thought, well, actually, no one should really get penalised for that. And if they do penalise someone... it will be Bourdais because the other guy is in a Ferrari. But, you know, if it's not the Ferrari International Assistance conspiracy theory, it's the they're manufacturing a tight championship theory. And, you know, Massa's got an extra point out of this. And, you know, a point's a point. And it's what was a 6-point gap is now a 5-point gap. It doesn't really matter whether, you know, whether these conspiracy theories are true or not. It's just the sheer fact that we can concoct them. You know, the fact that there's leeway for us to think these things, you know?
Absolutely. And it's not... I don't recall a season when there have been quite so many conspiracy theories being thrown at the FIA. I mean, there was... On an average season, you might get one, be it Michelin tyres or tuned mass dampers or whatever it is. But it almost seems like every single race, whether or not they're true, more and more FIA / Ferrari conspiracy theories are being brought to the front.
As far as I'm concerned, today there were three penalties. None of them should have been penalties, in my view. And, you know, there's a point where you just have to say, we've got racing, and we want good racing. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, that involves taking a risk. And so why are we trying to say on the one hand we want more overtaking, while on the other hand they're getting penalised for taking these risks? I mean, that's the point of trying to overtake someone, is that it might go a bit wrong. That's what makes overtaking special. We need the FIA to take a more arm's length approach and say, okay, you know, that was a bit, you know, borderline or whatever. It could have been a bad situation. There could have been a crash there, but, you know, that's racing. These things will happen. I mean, as far as I'm concerned today, we had three racing incidents. You've got to say, did anything anyone did today on the racetrack merit a driver losing 25 seconds, 30 seconds or whatever a drive-through cost you? And I don't think they did.
I don't think they did either. I think that you raise a very good point. And the stewards managed to ruin the racing today, because had that not happened, you may have seen a fight through the field from Massa and a fight through the field from Hamilton. And it could have been a very spectacular race. And as a result of the stewards' decisions, we were robbed of that. Thank you very much for bringing this up, Dr. V. All very, very good points. And much appreciate you calling.
Okay, thank you very much.
Cheers. And to follow up Dr. V's call on the line, we now have Alex to respond. Hello, Alex.
Hi there. To follow on from Dr. V just then, I was just thinking about the penalties in general, and my big point is that everybody seems to have been this weekend saying, oh, we should be seeing fewer of the penalties, and it's annoying that they're now dishing them out like candy, and that's in the last couple of races been doing that. And I agree, because I don't think any of these things should have been penalised this weekend. But earlier in the season, I think we really had a situation where we were all saying, oh, I can't believe that they didn't penalise this person, when clearly it says, due to rules 16.73, that they should have been penalised and they didn't, just because they were a red car. It's the consistency that we need, and we've all been asking for. So what has been, it's really difficult, is we can't really have it both ways. That's my view. And I really just keep thinking, what we want to do is have a set of rules that we can all clearly understand, that don't just suddenly get changed on the morning before the race. And when they, when an incident happens, we can clearly understand that's why the penalty happened, and they refer to why it happened. I don't want all of this stuff.
There was talk that there may be more information forthcoming from the stewards from next year. Do you think that would help the situation if we were given more information in terms of data readouts and things like that?
I think so. I mean, I know. Stephen's previously been against this. Stephen Roy, rather, has been against this. But for me, if they said, right, you have to be 100 metres behind before you, if you've cut an apex, before you can make a second attempt, yeah, then it would be clear cut. We would know the car was definitely 98 metres and therefore didn't give enough advantage back. You know, those kind of things would make it clear cut. If we had all the data and we knew what was going on.
Just to throw you a curveball, what's your feelings on the rumours that surfaced this week that Jean Todt might be about to step in to a high position within the FIA?
Well, earlier on Side Podcast, there was a conversation about the possibility of being an official driver being assigned as a steward. And people were talking about, former drivers, and saying that anybody of any standing would be seen as biased. And people were even already debating whether Jackie Stewart or Alan Prost would be more biased to Ferrari or McLaren or Williams. And these are drivers who haven't driven for, you know, serious amount of time. Jean Todt was with Ferrari only a few, you know, like last year.
This weekend, wasn't he?
This weekend, yeah, exactly. So this is completely insane. He cannot be seen as an independent person in the FIA. That is just bonkers if that happens.
Yes. There's going to be more. I mean, more questions will be asked. More conspiracy theories will be raised if they go ahead and do something like that. Do you think they're deliberately just throwing more controversy at it, or do you think they just don't care?
Well, I would love to think that it was neither of those two things. But I think it's the don't care version. They don't care what people think. And I think actually Bernie's been complaining about the British Racing Drivers Club for years as being a closed sort of community. And I think they've fallen into exactly the same trap. They haven't realised that the internet's just completely opened up the world of Formula One, and that their closed shop, where they could do what they liked and run it the way they wanted to, has just completely been blown apart. And actually, they really don't have the control that they used to have. And I think they are treating us like children, and that's very annoying to us.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you for your call. That's a good sentiment to leave it on.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Cheers. Jordan, do you know you're live?
Yes, I do.
How is it going? We just played your earlier voicemail.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I thought the race was pretty interesting. I think the FI went a bit too much on their calls, I think, for penalties. Otherwise, I think the one they investigated, I believe, the Moss and Bourdais incident, I believe, going into the first corner. I think that was just racing, in my opinion, anyway. You know, Bourdais had the line, Moss kind of came low, and they kind of collected each other. But I thought, other than that, it was a pretty good race. What did you think of it?
I thought it was, considering how bad we expected it to be, considering how bad last year's Fuji race was, it's not a great track.
Yeah, I preferred Suzuka, but...
Yes, I think most people prefer Suzuka. And all things considered, I think we thought it was an amazing race. It's certainly worth waking up for, or in your case, staying up for.
Yeah. The drive-through penalty for both Moss and Hamilton, I think they should have just did it for Moss, in my opinion, because I don't think Hamilton really did anything. I know it kind of looked like a racing incident, but on some of the replays, I think Massa went in too deep and kind of took him out. But I really think the FIA made a few too bad calls once again.
Do you think that was a bit of a hot-headed move from Massa, given that he should have known from the tire smoke at turn one that Lewis had locked up heavily? He could have played it a little bit easier and waited for Hamilton to pit.
Yeah, or he could have, if he has that good of a car, could have probably waited till the front stretch and then overtake him going into turn number one.
Yeah.
Instead of like blasting through the field that quickly.
It seems a bit rash from his point of view. What did you make of Alonso's race?
I was really happy to see Alonso. I'm a pretty big fan of him, so I was really happy to see him win again. I think he played a really good race. When the first corner of fireworks kind of happened, him and Kubica kind of slid underneath and took control of the race from there on out, and I thought he played a pretty good race. And right when, I believe Kubica went into the pits, it kind of reminds me of, you know, when 06 and before, when Michael Schumacher, you know, the leader would go into the pits and Michael Schumacher would bring out this beautiful qualifying lap, so it would just be stellar. And Alonso did that and was able to stay in front of Robert Kubica, and that was pretty cool.
And do you think, how much of a difference do you think the improvements that Renault have made? Because Piquet had a pretty good run too.
Yeah, Piquet had a really good run. You know, I'm happy to see him, you know, starting to do pretty well. I thought he was going to pass Kimi there, but I think they made a lot of improvements, and I wonder if Alonso's going to consider staying with Renault next year. I would really hope he would, but I think Renault have made pretty good improvements. Far on the outskirts side, and as well in the engine program, I think they probably stepped it up as well.
On that speculation of Alonso's future, he's obviously got the chance to stay at Renault. There's Honda has been rumoured, and also vague intimations that he may still be able to bump Kimi at Ferrari. Where do you see it happening, and what's the most likely?
Well, I don't really want him to bump Kimi out of Ferrari, but I think in a way I could see him going to Honda, but there you go. He's going back to, let's face it, kind of a backmarker team. But he can improve a car. With him and Ross Brawn there, I think both of them could improve a car well, but I think Alonso might have some second decisions and thoughts about where he might stay. I think he might personally stay at Renault, because I think maybe next year, we never know, Renault might be, you know, considered to win races next year and even the championship maybe.
Wow. So you're nailing your flag to the mast of Alonso staying at Renault.
Oh yeah, I think he will. I think that's the team he kind of grew up on, and I think that's where he'll pretty much stay.
Thank you for your call, Jordan. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much. Bye.
That was Jordan calling in with his thoughts on Alonso, and on the line now we have Scott, who I believe has something to say about Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really puzzled as to why Bernie decided to chuck Canada off the calendar, because I distinctly remember back in my interview when we did this, and we specifically said, didn't we, that North America was Formula One, was Bernie's main target, and their Formula One's main target. But then it just makes you think, well, if North America's your main target, then why are you taking away their races? I mean, it doesn't really make sense.
When America fell off the calendar, all the teams complained so much and said, look, we could have made up the shortfall. We could have paid the money to make sure America stays on the calendar. Do you think Bernie listened to that and just thought, okay, hold on a second, I see another way to make even more money here?
I don't know. I mean, he probably has his own way of doing things, but I think that it's important to listen to what the teams want, and not. I don't think it should always boil down to what Bernie says, and that's final. I think that if Bernie's going to make any decisions on the fates of any races, I think it should touch a straw poll from all the teams and as to whether it's a good idea to take it off or not.
I'm assuming you filled in the FIA survey that came out a couple of years ago and it said, what's your favourite racetrack? Did you take that survey?
I did, yes. I remember doing that, yeah.
And when you put down your favourite racetracks, what did you pick?
I maybe picked something like, I don't know, maybe Spa or Silverstone. I can't exactly remember. It's probably one of those two.
I think the question was the top five, and of the top five that I put in, one of them was Canada. That's now no longer there. One of them is Silverstone. That's only got one more year to run. Spa, I put down, and almost immediately after filling that in, the form in Spa disappeared for a year. And there's also rumours now that Bernie wants to remove Monaco due to the fact that he doesn't get enough advertising. He doesn't get the advertising revenue from Monaco, so therefore he's trying to pitch both Valencia and Singapore as replacements to Monaco so that he can get a bunch more advertising revenue.
Well, if he's trying to get rid of Monaco, I think he's absolutely bonkers. I mean, there's no way you can get rid of such a classic race like that. You know, I mean, if he does that, it'd be absolutely unheard of. I mean, why he's trying to promote Valencia when it is such a boring track? But before the race weekend, we were hyping it up because it looked great and where it was and on the docks and everything. But when it came to the race, we said it ourselves, it was an absolute lemon. So why is he trying to promote a race on a circuit which is essentially, even though it's new, it's rubbish.
But thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us tonight.
No problem. Always a pleasure.
Following on from that call, that was Scott. Next on the line, we have Flipster, and he's got a bit of everything on his mind. Hello, Flipster.
Hello. First off, Canada. Such a shame. Love the place. It's one of the few circuits where, well, it's not been messed about by Herman at all recently. So, it's a proper racing track rather than a long straight with a hairpin at the end, and then a series of free-flowing curves, and then another straight with another hairpin.
It was mentioned that Canada would be a perfect track. I think Jordan brought it up in the comments. It was a perfect track for bringing in Kurs. And now it's gone on the year that Kurs is introduced. Did you think that's a mistake on the FIA's part?
Well, I think getting rid of it anyway is a mistake because how many manufacturer teams have we got now? And how large a market is America? You know, you've got nothing in America, nothing in Canada. Closest they've got now really is Brazil.
Yes, that's a long... I mean, you have to feel sorry for any Formula One fans in America right now, because not only is it impossible or almost impossible to travel to any of the Formula One races, most of them are on inconsiderate times of the evening, and Bernie is trying to make them more inconsiderate. This race was obviously slightly in the favour of anyone in the States, but normally with night races in Singapore, it's only going to get worse. It's a tough life, I'd imagine, if you're a Formula One fan in the States.
Well, it always has been, but no doubt even more so now.
Do you see the race coming back next year?
I know the teams want it because they like going there. It's a nice place as well. You've got a beautiful trackside, you know, with the lake and all that. But, you know, I think it is purely about money.
In terms of today's racing, what do you make of what you saw today, Flipster?
It was a bit of a shambles all round for McLaren and Ferrari. You know, you had Hamilton locking up at the first corner. I've looked at all the pictures I can find through all the various sites, and I can see Heikki Kovalainen hitting Raikkonen, but I cannot see anywhere where Hamilton hit him. He's always left a nice space.
Do you think that Kubica could steal a world championship out of this? Because he's sort of playing the Kimi Raikkonen part this year.
Yeah, if Ferrari and McLaren keep throwing away points as they do, then yeah, we could have a BMW world champion. Be nice to see.
Do you think of the three contenders, who's the most deserving of those three?
Oh, don't ask me that. None of them.
Sorry. None of them are driven like a champion.
I really don't think any of them have. Kvyat is the closest, but yeah, there's been races where he's just been nowhere.
Alrighty, Flipster. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
In fifth place is Rhino Formula 1 with 7405. In fourth, Canuck F1 with 7434. Third is Late Apex with 7458. Second, Scuderia Bigotes with 7472. And in first place, Jordan F1 with 7768. This week, I have managed to do the stats in time for the podcast, which is amazing.
Okay.
So,
give me some information.
Fledglings fell the furthest from 8th to 27th, which is 19 places, but he had no points, so I'm not sure if something went wrong or if he just didn't want to play anymore.
That is a big fall.
Yeah. Hannah Montana Racing rose the most places, up to 94th with 558 points.
Shouldn't be allowed.
Talking of points, the most was for Mini 3696, which is Michael's team. He got 675 points with Alonso, Weber, Bordet, Kubica and Vettel.
675.
That's amazing.
What a point haul.
You are currently in 85th. You fell down three places. And I'm in 118th because I stayed in the same.
Right. I need to talk about my fantasy racer suggestion.
Okay.
Because the thing is, on Friday... in fairness, we've got to kind of discount this race a little bit because after free practice 2, which was Friday morning UK time, the Fantasy Racers website was dead. It died completely.
Yeah.
And didn't come back, I think, until 4 o'clock that afternoon.
Yeah.
Which gave us no time.
We had an hour, basically.
Yeah. A very, very, very small window of opportunity to do anything with your Fantasy Racers after finding the information from FP2, because you want to watch FP2 and get gather as much data as possible before making your decision.
Of course you do.
Well, obviously you don't, but ideally you want to do that. And we were unable to make our choices once we had the information. So a lot of the blame, I think, should go to the Fantasy Racers website, which was missing in action when we needed it most. However, it did come online just in time, just before the cutoff time at 5 o'clock.
It's quite funny, really, because it's the one day where we had so long between FP2 and the cutoff point.
Yep.
And it wasn't around.
No, that's true. When it did come back, I did call you up because we weren't together at the time. And I said, the Fantasy Racers website is working.
Yes.
And you said, maybe you want to put Alonso on your team.
Yeah.
And I said, ooh.
Well, you told me who you had, and it was like Vettel and Glock, I think.
Vettel and Glock. I was wavering on Vettel and Glock, and I could only afford Alonso if I took both of them out.
Yeah.
And in the end, you said I should.
I said put Alonso in there.
And I said, I don't think he's going to do that twice. I can't see him winning. I can't see him doing two races in a row.
So you didn't have Alonso in your team last week.
No.
And you didn't have him this week, but you've had him every other race.
Well, I haven't had him in my team since Renault started doing good. I lost the faith.
Right.
I ditched him.
You're a fair weather friend, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm the opposite. When they start doing well, I bail out.
Yes. Still, your story is not as bad as mine.
Well, at the same time as I was having my problems, you were having worse problems.
See, I was having an awful day on Friday anyway. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but basically I was tired and there was a lot of noise and I couldn't get what I wanted done because I...
So dedicated are you to the Formula One course, you took Friday off work,
didn't
you?
I used up a precious day of my holiday allowance and I took the day off and I was going to do all kinds of stuff for side podcasts.
Podcast stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to record some bits and pieces.
You couldn't do that because people were making noise outside.
It was really noisy.
Really inconsiderate of them.
And I was tired from watching FP1 and 2, so I was grumpy. Yeah. I was in a huge grump. Anyway, so... Fantasy Races is down all day. It comes back.
Yeah.
And you phone me up and say it's up.
Absolutely.
And I'm like,
yes.
That's brilliant, except for the fact that my internet has died.
Your entire communications network had failed.
Yes.
Which just added to your
hence
terrible...
you phoning me up.
Absolutely. Your entire... Yeah. You were not to be found. And your communication network had failed at the most inopportune moment, but it's okay because we had a backup plan. And I said, find your 3G modem, plug your 3G modem in, and you'll be up and running, which you did. And what happened?
Well, because earlier I'd said, this is no good if the Fantasy Racers site isn't available. How am I ever going to choose an arbitrary system?
Yeah, because
it's all going to go wrong.
Absolutely. Every week you've got to choose your arbitrary system. But Stephen Roy said in the comments, it's fine.
Yeah.
Because it's the first time ever that you'll be using the same arbitrary system 2 weeks in a row. So that'll be sort of arbitrary too.
And that's random because I hadn't designed it to do it that way.
Brilliant save from Stephen.
So
thank you.
That made me feel better.
However, the site came back up.
The site came up. I tried out my 3G modem. Mm. And it ran out of money, but not before I got to get rid of one of my drivers.
What point did you get into choosing your fancy races?
Because every time I go to choose my fancy races, I get rid of all my drivers.
Clear them out.
And then start again, because obviously I use random systems.
You logged onto the site.
So I logged onto the site and I got rid of my first driver and that was it. Money ran out, no internet.
Who was it?
It was Alonso.
You dropped Alonso first.
He was first on the list. His name begins with an F, for crying out loud.
Then the 3G card ran out of money. Then we tried to put more money on the 3G card, and the system that allows you to up your credits and put more money onto the card,
it was unavailable.
It said the system is down.
Yeah.
And by the time that system came back up, Fantasy Racers cut off with closed.
Yeah.
And you'd all you'd managed to do was
get rid of Alonso.
Which meant you didn't even have a random strategy by doing the same thing twice.
No. There were two issues. Firstly, I got rid of Alonso, who went and won the stupid race. Yeah. And secondly, it's not random. My system is ruined.
It's entirely fell to pieces. We should apologise that we didn't manage to put a fantasy racers reminder on the blog. Because
there was
the site
no point because the site wasn't up. And then my internet died, as we have discussed.
So whoever did well, congratulations. If anybody managed to sort out their teams in that window or before Friday, then congratulations to you. We both got screwed.
Feedback. I've got a couple of emails to share with you, but actually they're from last week because we didn't do a show last week because it was mini-series time.
Okay.
So these are just a quick recap of some of the emails I've had.
Please,
this first one is from Sebastian, and he's talking about what we said about Trilly in Singapore to start with, and then other things as well.
Okay, go for it.
Dear Christine, I thought you were horribly unfair in your bashing of Trilly. He had three options: stay where he was, spin around onto the racing line after a fast blind corner, or as he did, drive along an unused part of the track before turning into the pits. If anything, he deserved praise for his quick thinking in minimising the danger and disruption. I presume he communicated this to the stewards, who had to punish him for breaking two cardinal rules, but showed rare good sense in reducing it to a slap on the wrist.
Right.
He does also add that the car was half red, so maybe that's why.
I'm still inclined to disagree, because going the wrong way up a racetrack is a no-no, although you might say there's mitigating circumstances. The only thing that does spring to mind is facing the way he was, the corner he'd be looking at was a wide corner, and he'd have a reasonably good view of cars coming around there, although they would be coming quite quickly. I'm still going to stand by the fact that I just think he's an idiot for doing it, and whether or not there's any justification for it.
Sebastian continues, I will be appalled if they smooth out the bumps. I suspect they significantly contributed to the variety of the racing. The last thing we need is another move to homogenise the circuits. Singapore could become the new Valencia.
Is the new Valencia, and that's enough.
Yeah. I did enjoy Massa's pit stop fiasco, almost as comical as the European GP 1999, when Eddie Irvine's title challenge was similarly stymied in a pit stop, as the Ferrari team only had three wheels for him. Even when the fourth finally appeared, they still had a short conference before putting it on the car.
Yes.
What?
Yes. You not remember this one at all?
I that's before my time.
It's a bit of Formula One history for you, and I'm sure people in the live comments will remember it well. There was a wheel missing for whatever reason. But instead of just getting
on purpose?
Don't know. It's difficult. Oh. It depends, really. Depends on which conspiracy theory you're leaning towards.
Right.
But not only was there not a wheel available, but firstly, it took ages to find something, but when one was found, they still had some kind of long-term in-depth debate, right, whether or not the wheel should go on the hub and be screwed in, or whether or not it should just be held in the air by a mechanic.
I also had an email from RG about the Canada decision. He said, it's an idiotic decision, no doubt about it. It's got to be, along with Spa and Monaco, one of the finest tracks in the F1 calendar. The FIA and Bernie Ecclestone have once again listened to the sound of cash registers and deafened out the chorus of the fans. All they think about is money, money, and money. They don't care about the racing anymore, not the excitement, nor the fans. As a BMW fan, I see some sort of sentimentality towards Canada. We won our first and to date only race there. It was special. It was my favourite moment in F1 to date. Canada offers more than any Tilkodrome track can muster. It gets excitement yearly. This year was a fantastic race. Last year was something of a beauty too. It's got famed places, the Wall of Champions. It shows it can give the best of the best a real challenge on race days, not some sort of, oh my God, there is a wall within a mile of the track. We need to push it back. Mm-hmm. Way too dangerous.
Yeah.
Although some exaggerating there, safety has gotten a bit too out of hand. It has ruined the excitement. And sadly, safety has ruined other classic tracks too. Suzuka neutered the best corner there. They have neutered Spa and Monza too. F1 is going too pro safety. Whilst we need safety, at least keep the excitement of close balls there too, please. RG. Now, that's not why they've knocked it off the calendar though.
No, but you're not going to find a Wall of Champions in Fuji. Not for several miles.
No, that's true.
But I appreciate that's not the reason they've done it.
You would
at
Valencia though.
Yes, you could do. But although it's a really wide track for a street track.
Yeah.
As things go. It doesn't help the calls when the FIA say, fill in this survey and tell us what your favourite racetracks are, and people fill in their favourite racetracks and they systematically, one by one, remove those best racetracks from the calendar. So they're not helping their calls, and to a point I do agree with RG.
Housekeeping. Our site died today.
Yeah, after your technical issues on Friday, I thought we'd got rid of every single problem we were ever going to be faced with this weekend. But no, Sunday lunchtime, it all packed up.
Thankfully, it wasn't during the race.
Nope.
It was once it was all done.
Yes.
But
there were still conversations going on.
Yeah, it wasn't good timing.
No. And it became apparent just how important a server stability is during live commenting, because in a normal average week, if the server went down for half an hour, probably we wouldn't notice.
No.
Probably no one would complain. And it wouldn't be such an issue. But during races and during live shows, it's obviously extra, extra important. So the number one job on our list post-Brazil is going to be setting up some kind of stable and distributed live commenting system so that anybody who joins us in live commenting can be basically assured that the thing will be there.
It will always be up.
Yes. We're going to have to scale it out across sites and across databases and to make sure everything all syncs up. And it's a bit of work, but I can see that the number one job, the number one priority coming on the back of this season is going to be making sure that live commenting stays up. All year, it's been pretty good. Although the server company do have a habit of making fixes during free practice one on a Friday, because it's hosted in the States and that's their midnight. So
right.
They think at midnight is a good time to turn the server off.
Yeah.
Except we're live commenting some European race at 10 o'clock on a Friday morning, and that's bad timing. So we've got to find some kind of adjustment. So basically, just to say apologies to anyone who was on the server this afternoon. Sorry that it went down, and we will do everything we can to fix it and to address that problem.
So this weekend, it's kind of worn me out a little bit.
That was Fuji.
Yeah. All that getting up in the middle of the night.
Who'd have thought Fuji was going to be one of the most exciting races on this year's calendar?
It was definitely worth getting up for, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. I can't say there's any disappointment from anything we saw.
No. You watched it twice.
Yes. Many of us watched it twice. Don't single me out. there was a lot of live commenting going on twice there. I can't fault it at all. I do hope that China lives up to the expectations that we now have for it.
And it's going to be very, very soon. Because it's next week.
Yeah.
So we get like a day off and then it all starts again.
It's all up and running. We've already started working on inside track video for China, which is quite slightly confusing in the midst of a weekend.
We started before we'd even finished watching the Grand Prix.
That's the way it goes. It's back-to-back race weekends, which is good because there's more action. It's the penultimate round of this year's World Championship. It couldn't be closer at the front for whatever reason.
Let's not go there.
By pure coincidence, it's a really tight chase for the title championship. Constructors Championship is looking really tight. There's going to be a lot at stake in China. And I'm looking forward to it.